You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
This is MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition. I'm Anthony Kastrovitz. I am pleased to be joined by Jordan Bastian, live from Wrigley Field. And JB, the Francisco Lindor era is finally upon us. I am certain that the wait had nothing to do with the Super 2 deadline at all. But Lindor joined the club on Sunday in Detroit, made an immediate impression with a very memorable first base hit in the big leagues. What's your general takeaway of the timing of this move and what Lindor is ready to contribute to this club?
Well, I mean, as you mentioned, the Super 2, the general manager, Chris Antonetti, was pretty insistent all along that that was not a factor. But as we sit here today, we know that that deadline has likely passed. So they do call him up after that, which potentially saves them that extra year of arbitration that he could have potentially earned had he been called up earlier. But the other factors that Antonetti discussed in terms of the timing were wanting to find a point in the season where he was on, clicking on all cylinders and when the team was performing better. And along those lines, I mean, that's where we are right now. I mean, I think since the beginning of May, the Indians have been in the top five or eight teams in terms of record. And over the last few weeks, Lindor has been hitting about 400. So they kind of found that opportunistic moment within the season to bring him up here. And they already made the move with Gio Urshela, another prospect, and put him at third base. And those guys came up through the minor leagues together and have that comfort together on the left side of the diamond. So it'll be interesting. His first hit was definitely memorable. I think every player remembers their first major league hit, and I think a lot more than people in Lindor will remember his because he slipped on first base, flopped to the dirt. But I thought it was pretty impressive on his part to immediately hop up and blame Miguel Cabrera. Jokingly, that it was Miggy's fault. He pointed to Miggy, it was your fault I fell, which was kind of funny to see that happen. But, yeah, I mean, I think it was good the way Francona handled the debut. Didn't get him the start, let him kind of soak everything in, got him into the game late. The Indians were losing, but it was a chance for him to kind of get those jitters out of the way, which he said he had in the first at-bat and which he struck out. And then he gets the first hit out of the way. So if he starts, now at shortstop majority of the time for the Indians, which I think is going to be the case. You know, maybe now he's got some of those butterflies in his rearview mirror, and he can just focus on helping this team win.
I thought that first hit was kind of a perfect hit for him. He's got doubles power, not so much home run power, but
right.
Maybe doubles power. And as you said, blaming Miggy, and it takes a certain amount of confidence. I guess some guys would be maybe in awe of their surroundings or the situation, but he kind of played it right off of Miggy right there and kind of shows you his personality a little bit. Lindor is a very confident kid and has that feel of belonging, no matter whether he was ready for the major leagues or not up until this point. Always had that feel that he belongs in the major league clubhouse and not a major league diamond. And boy, I don't know if, what fans are expecting from him offensively, but defensively now they've totally reinvented themselves from the left-hand side of the infield, so the pitchers have to love that.
Yeah, they did. I think that's what he's always been highly touted defensively. Offensively, he's going to be a gap-to-gap guy. Like you said, he can generate hopefully a lot of doubles, and over time maybe that turns into some more power, which we saw over the last year, year and a half in the minors, where he admittedly said that some of his struggles initially at AAA dealt with the fact that he was hitting more home runs than he was used to because he suddenly was developing a little more power, and he felt he got kind of carried away of trying to hit for power, which was getting out of his game, which is being a guy who can make an impact on the bases, get extra base hits, and kind of, you know, hopefully make some contact and things like that. But defensively, you're right. I think this is an immediate upgrade. I think Jose Ramirez late last year, really shored up the infield after his Drupal Cabrera, but was obviously a little more disappointing this season in the early on when he was a starting shortstop. I think as the sample size grew larger, maybe we saw more of what Jose Ramirez is, and maybe potentially down the road that's a strong guy off the bench. So I think now the shortstop of the future is here. The Indians are hoping this isn't a scenario where they have to at any point send him back down. So it'll be interesting to see over the rest of the year what he can do.
Good old Frankie Lindor. Good to see him up. And we mentioned Miggy Cabrera. Boy, I mean, I think I tweeted this the other day. You can put, when Miguel Cabrera goes to the Hall of Fame, you just put his numbers against the Indians on the plaque, and that'll do it. He's all set.
Yeah,
he's hitting 647 against the Tribe this year. Off Corey Kluber, even. He's hitting 571 with five home runs in his career off Kluber. So Miggy's got something figured out against this club, I think.
Yeah, it's been pretty ridiculous. It's like you couldn't do these numbers in a video game. I've actually found it pretty funny how honest Kluber was when we asked him after the game, you know, what's the best way to pitch this guy? And he just looked at us and said, you're asking the wrong guy, you know, because he's performed so well against him. Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I think I looked up the only two guys that hit 350, at least 350 with at least 30 homers against the Indians are Miguel Cabrera and some guy named Babe Ruth. You're watching Babe Ruthian performance against the Indians right now. There's always that argument and that fan that's going to be out there screaming, just walk him every single time. But Yoenis Cespedes was pretty effective against the Indians too, hitting behind him. And earlier this year when Victor Martinez was there, he's been pretty effective against the Indians too. So, I mean, just walking him cut and dry just all the time doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, maybe there's been some opportunities where they could have done it a little more than they have. You know, I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that, but it's been crazy to watch. And, you know, it seems like when they get him out, it's more news than anything.
Yeah, the Tigers continue to be the Tribe's bugaboo more than any other team in the Central. That's just the way it's been the last few years. Let's talk about the bullpen here real quick. Cody Allen has definitely turned things around. Had an 18 ERA, 18 after five games. It's an ERA under two in the 23 innings pitched since. But on the reverse of that is Scott Acheson, who had a zero ERA in his first seven games and a mark just below 12 in the 13 games since. And, of course, Ash just came off the DL with that sprained ankle. What's going on with those two guys, the positive and the negative?
Yeah, I mean, I think with Cody Allen, when you looked at his first five outings, two of them, he gave up four runs in both of those outings. So he had two outings within his first five that just really bloated his pitching line. The other three, he was pretty effective. So those two meltdowns aside, that's the life of the reliever. I mean, when you're talking about early season meltdowns, it could take you months to make up the statistical ground that you lost when you're only working, two outs, three outs, sometimes four outs, you know, in each appearance. So I think what we've seen over time is, you know, those two outings were just two really bad nights, and Cody Allen was just fine. And over time, he's sorted it out and looked really strong. He said, obviously, the big key for him lately has been, you know, just walking fewer guys. He said mechanically and things like that, you know, he didn't really drastically change anything. He just kind of stayed the course. And figured everything would straighten out, and that's kind of where we've been. With Acheson, you know, it's been pretty disappointing. That's been one of Francona's go-to guys over the last 2 years. Last year he was, you know, kind of moved into the role Allen had in the prior year where he could kind of come in any inning, come in with guys on and be effective. Once Allen moved to that closer's role, you saw Acheson kind of slide into that stopper, not closer role. This year, you know, they hoped he could do that again. And he, you know, said he sprained his ankle midway through April, said that was kind of hurting his mechanics and he's having some compensation issues. You know, and obviously we've seen on the field how much that ankle plays into it. We're not exactly sure, but we've seen stats, as you mentioned, that have been pretty abysmal and kind of throwing a wrinkle into how Frank Coleman can use that bullpen. So, you know, we'll see. First outing off the DL, while it was pretty ugly, you know, you don't want to make too much of the first outing after a two-week layoff. He had one minor league rehab appearance before that. So I think we need to kind of see over these next few appearances for him kind of how he looks. But obviously out of the gates, that was pretty ominous, you know, coming off the DL and performing like that.
Shifting gears here to the draft, which took place last week, and the Tribe used their first pick on Brady Aiken, who was, of course, the number one overall pick in 2014 from the Astros. And suffice to say, things did not work out there with Houston and Mr. Aiken. He's since had Tommy John surgery. The Indians signed both Aiken and some other guys who are Aiken. I'm going to use that joke one way or another, JP. couple guys coming off labrum issues, a couple other guys coming off Tommy John. So what's behind that strategy, basically, in the draft?
Well, one thing that Brad Grant, the director of amateur scouting, mentioned with us is they have a few things that they look at when they're scouting pitchers. There's some things within delivery mechanics that they really focus on and feel are important in targeting pitchers based on some of these certain kind of trigger points, I guess you'd call them. And so the guys who have injury history, they felt that they really liked the deliveries and thought that they were good indications of long-term success and stability. Obviously, these guys have injury history in terms of the pitchers coming off the Tommy John. But I think, as we know now, Tommy John surgery is almost down to a science in Major League Baseball, and it can almost be seen as a positive that they've already had one. A lot of pitchers, it's become almost like a ticking time bomb until they have that surgery at some point. So maybe the fact that these guys already had it is a plus. You can let them rehab with a Major League staff and come back and get their career started, you know, a little bit delayed than otherwise. And there's a lot of trust in the medical staff. I think if you talk around baseball, you know, the Cleveland Indians medical staff and training staff is pretty highly regarded around the league. And so I think those two combinations, you know, those things that they feel that they really believe in terms of the mechanics and signs of potential durability, combined with, you know, the high regard for their medical staff, I think they believe, they feel like, while other teams might shy away, maybe it's an area where they can take advantage. So hopefully we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, Aiken was a number one pick overall. You know, regardless of some of the drama that unfolded last year with the Astros, I mean, this guy was highly touted enough to be taken with the first overall pick, and the Indians got him at 17. Obviously, he's not in the picture till 2016, but it's an intriguing pick. And I really liked overall in the draft how they really went heavy after pitching, especially early within the draft. I think if you look at the farm system, you know, they've got some solid position player prospects, a lot of outfield prospects, but the pitching prospects was getting a little barren. So I think it was pretty important for that team to really select a lot of pitchers and increase the probability that they hit, you know, on a handful of them in terms of getting some good prospects in the fold.
All right, JB. One last thing. The Cavs are going into game 6 in the NBA Finals. I don't know if they have it in them. I hope for Cleveland's sake they have it in them. 20 years ago, a Tribe team lost the World Series in game 6, unfortunately. But I don't know. For my money, that might be the greatest team of my relatively reasonably short life to this point, from the standpoint of winning 100 games, 144 game season. They'll be celebrated this weekend at Progressive Field. Should be good to see that group back together.
Yeah, I hated that team, man, because I was growing up in Chicago. You know, and that's a sign of respect to say, as a kid, I hated when the Chicago teams would play Cleveland, because that team was just, they intimidated you. You looked at Albert Bell and, you know, a lot of those other guys in that lineup, and they would just, you know, bludgeon other teams to death. It's unfortunate for Cleveland that they lost in the World Series, because, I think that might go down as one of the best teams, if not the best team, to finish as the runner-up. So it's kind of a shame, you know, the numbers that they put up, too, in the shortened season. I mean, it was pretty remarkable, pretty impressive, and, you know, we had a chance this spring to be around Albert Bell, you know, and kind of talk baseball with him, and obviously a lot of those other guys come around. Omar Vizquel has been around. Baerga is still around the team. Kenny Lofton still has a little bit of a presence. You know, it was such a great team. I think it's pretty cool that they're going to have the reunion with so many of those guys coming up next weekend. You know, I think they're having a cool T-shirt giveaway. We saw them in GV artwork. You know, it's pretty cool. We got a sneak peek of that. It says the summer of 95 and has a lot of the guys drawn on the front of the T-shirt. So it'll be cool to have that celebration of a team that I think should be celebrated a lot more than they are, just because of the fact that they did lose in the World Series. You know, and that's kind of the shame in terms of the historical perspective on it.
Well, 20 years from now, we can look forward to the Cavs bringing back Dellavedova for a big reunion weekend.
Man, that guy's never going to have to pay for a meal or a drink in Cleveland in his life ever again, huh?
No, all the Fosters is on us from here on out. I want to thank Jordan Bastian, for joining us, and thank you all for tuning in. This has been MLB.com Extras, Cleveland Indians edition.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go, every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.